ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तथेन्द्रो रोचनस्त्वासीद् देवश्चातुष्टिधादय ऊर्जस्तम्भादय सप्त ऋषयो ब्रह्मवादिनः. During the reign of Swarochisa, the post of Indra was assumed by Rochan, the son of Yajna. Tushit and others became the principal demigods, and Urjastamba and others became the seven saints. All of them were faithful devotees of the Lord. Vedashira was a very celebrated rishi. From the womb of his wife, whose name was Tushita, came the avatar named Vibhu. Vibhu remained a brahmachari and never married throughout his life. From him, 88,000 other saintly persons took lessons on self-control, austerity, and similar behavior. O King, the third Manu, Uttam, was the son of King Priyavrata. Among the sons of this Manu were Pavana, Srinjaya, and Yajnahotra. During the reign of the third Manu, Pramada, and other sons, Vashishta became the seven sages. The Satyas, Vedashrutas, and Bhadras became demigods, and Satyajit was selected to be Indra, the king of heaven. In this Manvantara, the supreme personality of Godhead appeared from the womb of Sunrita, who was the wife of Dharma, the demigod in charge of religion. The Lord was celebrated as Satyasena, and he appeared with other demigods known as the Satyavratas. Satyasena, along with his friend Satyajit, who was the king of heaven, Indra, killed all of the untruthful, impious, and misbehaved yakshas, rakshasas, and ghostly living entities who gave pains to other living beings. The brother of the third Manu, Uttama, was celebrated by the name Tamasa, and he became the fourth Manu. Tamasa had 10 sons, headed by Prithu, Kyati, Nara, and Ketu. During the reign of Tamasa Manu, among the demigods were the Satyakas, Haris, and Viras. The heavenly king Indra was Trishika. The sages in Saptarishi Dhamma were headed by Jyotirdham. O King, in the Tamasa Manvantara, the sons of Vidriti, who were known as the Vaidritis, also became demigods. Since in course of time the Vedic authority was lost, these demigods by their own powers protected the Vedic authority. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Tamasa Manvantara, there are two kinds of demigods, and one of them was known as the Vaidritis. The duties of the demigods is to protect the authority of the Vedas. The word devata refers to one who carries the authority of the Vedas, whereas rakshasas are those who defy the Vedic authority. If the authority of the Vedas is lost, the entire universe becomes chaotic. Therefore, it is the duty of the demigods, as well as kings and aides of governments, to give full protection to the Vedic authority. Otherwise, human society will be in a chaotic condition in which there cannot be peace or prosperity.
Hare Krishna. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be with all of you once again in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath's most merciful abode. Thank you very much. We're reading today from Canto 8 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 1, entitled The Manus, Administrators of the Universe, text number 20 through 29. This chapter begins with King Parikshit spending the very last days of his life on the bank of the Ganga River, sitting at the feet of Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami has already, in previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, described Swayambhuva Manu, his descendants. He has just described the whole story of Sri Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto. And Parikshit Maharaj is very eager to hear more. He wants to hear about all the different manus. Now, why is this? If you only have a few more days to live, would you be asking about all the different manus? Honestly, you would probably want to hear a Krishna book or something like that. Parikshit Maharaj only has a few more days. It's 100% for certain that he will die after 7 days. In the beginning of the first day, he gave up his home, went to the Ganges, and then all other sages began to assemble. He was inquiring from them all, requesting all of them to speak about the highest subjects and the supreme duty of all human beings. What is the primal duty of a man about to die? And he especially wanted to hear about Krishna, who is the dearest friend, Lord, and an intimate associate of his relatives, the Pandavas. So Sukadeva Goswami has just presented the beautiful story of Prahlad and Lord Narasimhadev. A story of total dependence on God. This was Prahlad's opulence. He did not exhibit physical strength. He didn't really have much of anything. But he was completely depending on Krishna. He realized with complete faith that if Krishna wants to destroy you, nothing can save you. And if Krishna wants to save you, nothing can destroy you. And it was in such an extreme environment, because Hiranyakashipu was the most powerful person in the entire universe. He had subjugated all the devatas. And little Prahlad was completely helpless, 5 years old. There was nobody in the entire world that was coming to his aid. He was totally alone against Hiranyakashipu. And all of the armies, military, and chief commanders of Hiranyakashipu. They were collectively, vehemently hateful toward Prahlad. With words, with thoughts, with actions, they were impelled to destroy him. And we don't find anybody even consoling Prahlad. And he was just a frail little boy, 5 years old. Yet he was fearless. And he was happy. This was something that really Hiranyakashipu and his people could not tolerate. Not only could they not kill Prahlad, they could not make him unhappy. They could not agitate him. They could not make him angry. Prahlad never said, "You rotten father, you..." He never became angry. He never, as they would say in today's world, he never lost his cool. He was just composed. Between assassination attempts of Hiranyakashipu, whenever Prahlad would see his father, he would offer his obeisances with folded hands and say sweet words to him. And Hiranyakashipu was frustrated. He had everything on his side. He had all the wealth, he had all the power, mystic cities. Prahlad had nothing. Yet Prahlad was peaceful and Hiranyakashipu was always agitated. What was the strength of Prahlad? It was a mystery. In fact, Hiranyakashipu himself asked, "What is your strength? Where do you get this strength to defy my authority?" And Prahlad, very respectfully, as Hiranyakashipu had a sword and he was about to cut off Prahlad's head, screaming at him with eyes glaring like red coals, "Where do you get your strength from to defy my authority?" And Prahlad just spoke the truth. Said, "My father, same place that you get your strength from. From the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Now, Hiranyakashipu hated God. He hated Vishnu. Violently. Because Vishnu had killed his brother. Now, if we really look at it from a social, psychological perspective, those words were the ultimate insult. Yes? The ultimate competitor, enemy, and hated person from Hiranyakashipu was Vishnu. And Prahlad is saying, whatever you have is only by the mercy of Vishnu. Whatever strength you have, it's all Vishnu's strength. Now, Prahlad was very intelligent. He knew how those words of truth would infuriate his father. And even when his father was running to him with his heavy, sharpened sword, about to sever Prahlad's head, Prahlad was not disturbed. He was happy because he was depending on Krishna. That was his opulence. Complete dependence on the mercy of the Lord. That is the ultimate strength that anyone could have. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya. Because Krishna, he is the source of all strength. If we depend on Krishna, we are beyond material existence. Haridas Thakur was compared to Prahlad also. He was being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Violently beaten. Yet the whole time he was smiling and he was chanting Hare Krishna. And these executioners, the fact that they couldn't kill him completely bewildered them. But even more so, they couldn't make him unhappy. The only unhappiness that Haridas was exhibiting was that he felt sorry for the people trying to kill him. The only unhappiness of Prahlad in his life, the only unhappiness, was he felt sorry for his father because he loved him. He loved the man who hated him so much. And then we read, Lord Narahari appears and offers Prahlad any benediction after liberating Hiranyakashipu, after destroying Hiranyakashipu. And the only benediction Prahlad wants, give my father liberation. He was so sinful, so bad. Sukadeva Goswami describes to Parikshit Maharaj in great detail how a devotee is beyond birth, beyond death, because a devotee is completely depending on the Supreme Lord. And after completing the story, Parikshit Maharaj wants to hear about other manus. And the last 10 verses that we just read today are quite technical. Just lists of names. And not very easy names to pronounce either. What to speak of remembering them? Now, the clock is ticking. I don't know if they had clocks in those days, but 7 days. Every second is so precious. And Parikshit's asking about the manus. Because Parikshit was so intelligent, so cultured, and so self-realized, he understood that anything he asked Sukadeva Goswami is going to be about Krishna. Because everything is about Krishna, if it's understood correctly. The entire history of the universe can be spoken in various ways. Some describe history as the rise and fall, you know, through the medium of the rise and falls of different civilizations, or through various wars among human beings, or different isms, capitalism, communism, socialism, or through different philosophies and philosophers who lived and guided people's way of thinking over the ages. But from the Vedic perspective, this is why the Puranas are so important, the Itihastas, the entire history of everything is focused around God or Krishna. The avatars of Krishna. And what makes the Manu so important that Parikshit wants to hear about them is because the Lord incarnated again and again in connection to these Manus. Just previous to this verse, Sukadeva Goswami was explaining how Swayambhuva Manu, he ruled the entire world for many years. And then he retired along with his wife, Sutapa. And what did they do when they retired? It's not that they, you know, from their king's treasury over the years as they were king, they built a retirement home for themselves. Sometimes we find kings in the Egyptian times, the great kings, while they were living, they would build massive pyramids for themselves so that when they die, they would die as kings. All the best things they had were in their tomb. Treasuries of money and thrones and crowns and all that stuff. And they'd be buried with that. And then they'd have Brahmins who arranged different curses, that if anybody tries to come in and take anything away, they will be cursed. And all generations of their descendants will be cursed. These were mystic people too. To build the pyramids, there had to be mystic powers in those days. And there were mystical curses. Why? Because they were so attached to keeping all their stuff. Even after they were dead. Hare Krishna. Huge expenses, massive expenses for their tombs. And politicians these days, practically so many countries, they really, whether they're kings or governors or ministers, whatever, they know that they may not be in office as long as they would like to, so they try to get as much money as they can. And they accumulate it. Because they're not really sure what's going to happen afterward. So they want to make sure that they could live very comfortably, opulently, with security for the rest of their lives. So they just stash it. During office, whether it's through bribes or through whatever legal means, they somehow or other try to get as much as they can when they can and build their security for the future. Yes? Well, Swayambhuva Manu and his wife, she was exactly the same as him in this sense. They had everything. And when it came to retirement, they both went to the forest with nothing. They brought nothing. Why did they do that? Because the end of life is like the grand finale of what you've done in this human existence. And it's the time when really we should totally absorb ourselves in Krishna. And what that means is totally depend on Krishna. So that's why these kings would leave everything. Because then they had no other alternative but to totally depend on Krishna. We read about Kuresh, who was actually the lord of a district of South India called Kura. That's why he was Kuresh, the lord of Kura. He was so fabulously wealthy man. Beautiful palace. His wife, Andal, they were very, and they were so charitable. They were the proprietors of massive expanses of land. They were landlords, and so many people were paying them rent, taxes. And whatever they had practically, they'd given charity. From early morning, from the time the sun rose till night, they would leave their gates open and give in charity. And anybody who came, whatever they wanted, they'd give it to them. They were so charitable. Then at night, the gates would close. And Lakshmi Devi in the temple asked one of her pujaris, "What is that gate closings? What is that sound every night?" He said, "That is the gate closing. He gives charity all day." And she's the goddess of fortune. She said, "I want to meet him." So the wife, the pujari came and told Kuresh and his wife, Andal, that Lakshmi is so pleased by your giving so much charity to so many people that she wants to see you. That would make most of us thrilled. Yes. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "Don't try to see Krishna, but serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you." Well, these days, most people want to see Lakshmi more than they want to see Krishna. She's the goddess of fortune. Well, Kuresh was serving Lakshmi in such a way that she wanted to see him. She personally called for him. Was he thrilled? He was such a devotee that he was ashamed. Instead of thinking, "Just see, Lakshmi is calling for me. Let the world know that she's called for me." He was ashamed that I'm giving this mundane stuff out. She's the giver of devotion, the supreme giver of devotion, and I'm just doing this. So he didn't go to see Lakshmi. Rather, he gave up everything he owned with his wife and decided to go live with his Gurudev and cultivate bhakti in a way that they would completely depend on Krishna. They were in the middle of the night. They went within a matter of minutes. They were billionaires to completely homeless wanderers with nothing by their own choice. They had those big gates protecting them. and all sorts of ministers. And now they're all alone in the middle of the jungle at night. And for any of you who have gone into the jungles in the middle of the night, I guess it's something like Bombay. But there's all sorts of sounds. Here in the jungle, all of a sudden you hear psss on the ground, snakes. Then you hear, awoo. Then you hear, and you can't see anything. So Anda was afraid. She was never in such a situation like this. And she told Quraysh, I'm afraid. And Quraysh asked, did you bring anything with you? She said, no, of course not. Anything? She said, actually, I brought one thing. I brought this silver cup. The purpose of this silver cup was to feed you. It's not for me. It's to feed you. He said, that is why you are afraid. Because you have brought something with you. You are not completely depending on Krishna. Throw the cup away. So she threw the cup deep into the dark forest. And as soon as she did that, she became fearless. Because why are we afraid in this world? Because we're identifying with temporary body. We're identifying with temporary possessions, and everything is vulnerable. Our possessions could be taken away, could be destroyed. Our body can be taken away and destroyed at any time, no matter who we are. Therefore, there's so much fear. But whether we have a lot or whether we have a little, to depend on Krishna is to be honest, to be truthful, and to understand the reality of our predicament. So Quraysh and his good wife Andal, they went to Sri Rangam in a completely peaceful state. And whatever their Gurudev gave them, a little kutir to live in, they were happy. But the happiness was not the kutir. The happiness was in remembering Krishna, in depending on Krishna. So Swayambhuva Manu, he and his wife, they were not just the king of a kingdom. They were the emperors of the entire world. And we read about the opulence that they possessed. They left it all. They went to the middle of the forest with nothing and performed tapasya. And Swayambhuva Manu was offering beautiful prayers in complete devotion, depending on the mercy of the Lord. And while he was in trance, some rakshasas, a whole army of rakshasas came to kill him. Hare Krishna. Why would they do such a thing? In this world, you know, the eternal pure soul, covered over by the ahankar, the ego, can become so demented and so envious and so cruel. They actually charged at him to eat him. They wanted to kill him and eat him. And he was in trance. He was Om Namo Bhagavate, something like that. He was chanting beautiful prayers, remembering Krishna. Eyes were closed, and they were attacking him. But he was completely depending on the Lord. For one who loves the Lord, there are no enemies. Krishna explains this in the Gita also, that you don't have enemies. You don't see anyone as enemies. In fact, it is said that you are the friend of all living beings when you surrender to the Lord. But yet, throughout history, we find that those who surrender to the Lord, so many people hate them, are envious of them, try to destroy them. The Pandavas, they were the friend of all living beings, but so many people were trying to kill them. Prahlad was the friend of all living beings, but he was constantly under attack. That means the super soul within the heart of every living being and the soul of every living being loves a devotee of the Lord. But the false ego, the ahankar, corrupts all proper conception of who you are and what you really feel. So this is the power of the ego. A perfectly compassionate, innocent man is doing tapasya, and they go to kill him and eat him. And at that time, Lord Krishna incarnates, what was his name? Yajnamurti? Something? He incarnates, and he gets all the demigods to join him, and they destroy all the rakshasas and protect Swayambhu Manu. So yes, this description of the various manus are wonderful descriptions of Krishna and how he appears in so many ways throughout history to protect his devotees, to reestablish the principles of religion, and to annihilate the obstacles to pure devotional service. And we are about, in the next few verses, to hear about how this manvantara of the name of Tamasa is about the story, his story is about to usher in the story of Gajendra and how the Supreme Lord comes to save him in his desperation. If you ask Sukadev Goswami about the weather, he would describe it in terms of the various avatars of the Supreme Lord. Because he's seeing Krishna everywhere. Because he's seeing the truth. Sarva karana karanam. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Sukadev Goswami is seeing Krishna as the cause of everything that's happening. And he's so absorbed in Krishna that any situation, he'll connect it to Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, anything he'd look at, he'd give an analogy that connected it to Krishna. He'd see a tree. Devotee asked him, how do we see nature? And Prabhupada said, well, the tree is the tree, the soul of the tree is part of Krishna, so and Krishna is in the super soul within the tree, so Krishna is in the tree. So when he sees the tree, he's going to describe it from the perspective of Krishna's presence within the tree. For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him who, for that person, I am never lost, nor is that person ever lost to me. That is Gita. And that is bhakti. To see everything in relationship to Krishna. And therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, when he asked Sukadeva Goswami about the Manus, he knew for sure that he was going to get pure Krishna Katha, exactly what he needed to hear. Exactly what the entire universal creation needs to hear. Are there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, in the household life, as you are giving an example of Kuresh, even in a household life, we understand that our aim and goal of life is self-realization. So after some point of time, we wind up our all activities and we try to focus on Krishna consciousness. And we planned our life that everything goes all right in our, the main destination, the main goal is not to be sacrificed. So everything we planned it and we see to it that we will get this much and we will be able to survive. But one thing is very clear, Maharaj, that I can tell about myself is, we are still attached. We are still attached to that whatever we are going to get it, from that we are going to survive. And so we are not 100% dependable on Krishna. We are dependable on what we are going to get out of it. And we will be surviving on that. So if we have that consciousness, then we will get the highest destination or still we have to prolong and prolong and prolong. Even although we have planned everything, still we'll not, the level of courage and everything, we have not yet got it. We have not reached to that standard. 100% dependability on Krishna. That means still the purification is not total. So then the destination will not be so clear or something, concession will be there.
Is that a question? Or is that a self-analysis?
I wanted to know, Maharaj, that although we are not 100% surrendered, we are attached to all other things also. Although we have planned it, we have done everything that is needed for self-realization as a final goal of our life, but the standard of Kuresh standard we have not kept in our life, still we will be getting the same benefit which Kuresh got it.
We cannot imitate, but it is our sacred duty to follow in the footsteps, to understand the spirit of these great souls. We cannot imitate Prahlad. We cannot imitate Haridas Thakur. We cannot imitate Dhruva Maharaj. We cannot imitate Kuresh. We cannot imitate Raghunath Das Goswami. We cannot imitate Srila Prabhupada. But we could understand the principles that they held sacred and try to follow in their footsteps by being the servant of the servant of their servants. That is the path of perfection. So in today's world, we are reading about the Satya Yuga.
in the Satya Yuga. Of course, Koresh was in Kali Yuga. But ultimately, he lived in an ashram with his Gurudev, with his wife. But Swayambhuva Manu and these devotees, they could just live in the forest. Most of us, we don't have that training that we could just live in the forest till we die. But it's not required. It's the spirit of dependence on Krishna that's required. Whether you live in Vrindavan, or whether you live in Bombay, that spirit of cultivating that complete dependence on Krishna. We may need things for our... If we don't have enough material resources, it may be more difficult to depend on Krishna. Yes? So for some people, just to have the basic needs that they require help them to focus their mind on their sadhana and serve others. So as a grihastha, we may have a home, we may have a family, we may have things. Whether you have them or don't have them, we should not be attached to them. We should use them. We should utilize them for the highest purpose in life. And in that spirit, we are following in the footsteps of the great souls. Does that answer your question? Yes. They're bringing microphone for you, if you can just wait one moment.
Sometimes in life we go through difficulties and then we think that Krishna has abandoned us. How can we, in this time of difficulties, see it as everything as Krishna's mercy?
Can you repeat? Because I didn't understand so well.
Sometimes in life we have troubles and we feel that Krishna has abandoned us. How can we see these troubles as Krishna's mercy?
Did everyone understand? She has Spanish accent. He said, sometimes we have troubles and we think that Krishna has abandoned us. How can we see this as Krishna's mercy? Krishna never abandons us when we turn to him sincerely. And that is why we have these beautiful stories from the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Mahabharata and Ramayana to show how people, even in the most serious troubles, they turn to Krishna. Tenukampam susamikshimano punjana evatmakritam vibhagam. That when we are in difficult situations, even if we feel abandoned by Krishna, we should know that even if he apparently abandons us, it's only to increase the intensity of our longing to reconnect with him. The gopis felt abandoned by Krishna. But in that situation, they didn't forget Krishna. They longed for Krishna. They cried for Krishna. And actually, they were closest to Krishna than anyone. from within. Queen Kunti, when her children were banished to the forest, she didn't feel abandoned by Krishna. And even if she did, in that urgency, she was really crying out for Krishna because she really knew that she needed Krishna's help. And that's where she felt Krishna's presence the deepest. Vipara shantu tasha shvatatra tatra jagatguru. And when everything was nice, she was praying, let calamities happen again. Because that's when I'm most deeply connected with you. Because that's when I'm most urgently crying out for you. So if we have association of devotees who remind us of this, and we perform our sadhana in such a way that we gain that spiritual connection, then we can spiritually grow deeper and deeper in our bhakti and gain a greater and greater connection to Krishna in the troubles that come upon us. Bhakti is the art of turning curses into blessings. Things that are most difficult, are most unwanted, can be transformed into the greatest opportunities to connect to Krishna and develop our love for Krishna and feel Krishna. But that is our free will. We have to make that choice. Krishna never, ever, ever abandons a devotee who turns to him. That is his promise. But surrendering to Krishna is not just a casual, complacent way of living. When you're hungry, there's a need for food. Yes, we have to be hungry for Krishna. And the difficulties that come in our life are opportunities to really make us aware how much we really need Krishna. And sometimes the fire of tribulation and difficulties in life burn away our misconceptions that anything else can save me except Krishna. And how do we access Krishna? Through the guidance and association of devotees. Through the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, the words of the Acharyas, and through the holy names, and through the deity, and through our service, we take shelter. The troubles in life can be transformed into blessings if we just take shelter in that situation. So it is a blessing. Sometimes Krishna, yasya haman agrimai harishye tadhanam shanai. Yudhisthira Maharaj asked kind of the same question. You say you protect your devotees, but why you took everything away from us? And Krishna said, when I show the greatest installment of my compassion upon my devotee, I take everything away and everyone away. So that the devotee has no one else to turn to except me. But But we need the help of association of devotees, and we need our sadhana in order to turn to Krishna in that situation. Sometimes Krishna takes away the temporary things that are going to be lost anyway, just to give us himself. And that's a blessing. Does that answer your question? Thank you. So many people. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, first accept my most humble obeisances at your lotus feet. I'm so happy to see you. My question is similar to this Mataji. The difference is, when we have sufferings, is it the result of our bad karmas or Krishna wants to purify us?
Krishna always wants to purify us. And that's probably also the results of your bad karma. Is there any other question? Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaja, we find that those who are young couples coming to Krishna consciousness, sometimes the wife feels that if my husband becomes very serious in Krishna consciousness, you know, then he will love Krishna more and more and he may not love me. And also she feels that if he becomes more and more serious in Krishna consciousness, he may show lack of interest in material life and all that. On the other hand, if a woman becomes very serious in Krishna consciousness, then husband also feels a kind of insecurity that she is becoming too serious in spiritual life. And he feels that spiritual life is equal to detachment. Now, spiritual life means, you know, because we find Prithu and Archi or Malayadvaja and Vaidarbhi, all of them going towards forest and giving up everything, and it is very frightening because sometimes they come for the Bhagavatam class and they hear these things and they get frightened. So he also feels that becoming serious in spiritual life means gradually we will have to give up things of the world. And so because of this, although we would like to have some young couples becoming serious in Krishna consciousness and helping, assisting and preaching, we often find that they prefer to keep a little distance and occasionally visit and enjoy the spiritual entertainment by visiting temple. You know, so what can give them some kind of assurance that we only stand to gain by going closer to Krishna? We don't stand to lose. You know.
Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is as it is. What can we do? We can't say that Swayambhuva Manu went to a retirement home with him. The fact is, all these kings did go to the forest. But we learn from the acharyas the spirit. Because the fact is we're going to lose everything materially today or tomorrow. So what really is important in life? What's important is self-realization. And very few people could actually imitate what these very liberated Paramahamsa has done. But as it was explained, the spirit is what is important. As far as attachment,
far as Sata Rupa and Svayambhuva Manu, there is no people in the world today that I have ever seen, husband and wife, that were so faithful to each other. Yes? And Koresh and Andal, their love for each other, their complete dedication to each other as husband and wife, is unparalleled. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his wife, the connection of the dedication that they had for each other was unparalleled. Because they love Krishna, because they were detached from the egoistic, mundane stuff and they were really attached to Krishna, they had pure spiritual love for each other. And they were completely in ecstatic love. They were duty-bound to Krishna to take care of each other. Satarupa went to the forest with Svayambhuva Manu. Not begrudgingly. She equally wanted to go. And they were together, whether they were in the palace or in the forest. So in these days, people who, you know, have all kinds of material attachments, they usually get divorced. Yes? It's growing in India. It's already about 70% rate in America within 3 years. In Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, there is no such thing as divorce. It cannot exist. Can only exist when you're not Krishna conscious. And if devotees are divorcing, that means they're not Krishna conscious. There's no divorce in Krishna consciousness. And it's not just that the husband and wife in Krishna consciousness, they hate each other because they're Maya, but they just somehow or other suffer till the end with each other out of duty. Prabhupada explained the purpose of marriage is to be happy in Krishna consciousness. They become spiritual partners. They share the highest goal with each other. And if you're actually sharing the highest goal with each other, you're going to gain the highest respect for each other. And through that respect, as you love Krishna, you love every living entity, which includes your husband or your wife. You become more tolerant. You become more humble. The relationship becomes deeper in bhakti. So whether you're living in a beautiful palace or whether you're living in the jungle, the principle is the same. To the degree you're attached to material things, to that degree you're going to have too much ego, and there's not going to be, and you're going to be detached from Krishna. Husband and wife, no matter what situation, whether they're walking through the forest or whether if they're flying first class on Jet Airways to go to a holy place, how are we cultivating dependence on Krishna? How are we cultivating a taste to hear about Krishna? How are we cultivating a taste to chant the names of Krishna? How are we cultivating the taste to serve Krishna as a team? Then there's real love, there's real dedication, there's real commitment, and there's real happiness. Does that answer your question? Now his next question is, if grihastha life is so good, then what do we tell the brahmacharis? Well, if nobody asks, I won't answer. Yes, you ask? In order to be able to do that in Grihastha Ashram, it's not easy. You have to really surrender. Brahmacharis are surrendering in their way, depending on Krishna in their way. A person should not be a brahmachari because he's simply because he doesn't want to bother with responsibilities of a family life. Brahmacharis should be brahmacharis because they want to dedicate their full 100% energy directly in the service of Guru and Krishna, without all of the distractions of bills and mortgages and getting food and putting kids in school and everything. It's all service. It's all service. No doubt, everything a proper grihastha does is devotional service. But a brahmachari could channelize their full energy totally without distraction and service to the entire society. And in that state, it's a very, if we do it properly, it's a very rapid and powerful way of learning to completely depend on Krishna. So both ashrams are perfect if they're done properly. Does that answer your question? One more question and then we should end.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your wonderful class and question answer session. One question I had in mind is about this point which you mentioned just now, about the need to 100% dedicate our life and energy in service of Krishna. There are two principles that I have been kind of confused about. One is, many times we develop a desire and a need to chant more or hear more. As we spend some time, we feel I may need to do a little more hearing and chanting. And also at the same time, there are so many services and responsibilities that are coming up. And we hear that if we take up more responsibilities for Srila Prabhupada's mission, and we'll make advancement and we'll actually develop taste for hearing and chanting. So if we engage more in hearing and chanting, that may mean we may have to say no to few responsibilities that are coming our way. So my question, Maharaj, is what are the principles that we should consider, or what parameters should we consider when taking a decision whether to take more responsibilities, or how should we decide on taking up more and more for Krishna service?
In order to have good health, we have to have proper food and proper rest. Yes? If you sleep but don't eat, you will not be healthy. If you eat but don't sleep, you will not be healthy. We have to balance both intelligently, sincerely. Similarly, we have to give proper quality time to our sadhana. That is essential. And then we have to take responsibility. So they should be balanced. If we take so much responsibility that we can't keep our health proper, or we can't keep our sadhana proper, then we will not be able to sustain ourselves on a spiritual platform. Our sadhana is a critical part of our responsibility, to be exemplary in our sadhana. our character. Just taking on some management or taking on some preaching or taking on some book distribution or whatever it may be is responsibility. Taking on family, that's a responsibility. But living with good character is also our responsibility. And performing our sadhana qualitatively and quantitatively properly is also our responsibility. And having proper relationships with Vaishnavas is also our responsibility. So we have to see the whole picture and balance all of these responsibilities in such a way that it is healthy for us, and in such a way that we can actually be really contributing something through our example and through our efforts to the society. So as far as possible, we should take on more and more responsibility. But not at the cost of the basic foundational principles. We have to give the time for that. We should have, our Krishna consciousness should be qualitative, not just quantitative. We want to increase the quantity of what we do as far as possible, but not be at the expense of the quality of our consciousness. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.